Hi, this is Bridget with the Lynn Daily Item, Wednesday, June 10th. Marblehead passes $15 million override. Noonan and Ferrante win select board seats. Clucas, Jordan win school committee seats. By Sophia Harris. Marblehead. Voters approved Question 3, a $15 million operating override, and the largest of three competing options on the ballot, with 54.3% of the vote. The measure gives Marblehead its first operating override since 2005, and at more than five times the size of the $2.73 million override approved that year, the largest operating override the town has passed. Voters also approved Question 4, a $2.3 million override for curbside trash, recycling, yard waste, and disposal services, with 67.4% support. The result keeps trash collection funded through the tax levy rather than through a fee, which town officials had described as the alternative. Town officials tied the questions to a budget gap they said would widen without new revenue. In the select board race, incumbent Aaron Noonan won re-election, and Rosanna Ferrante captured the second available seat. Jennifer Schaffner was not elected. The school committee race also featured three candidates competing for two seats. Melissa Clucas led the field, followed by Anne Marie Jordan. Sarah Fox was not elected. Fox said, "I want to wish a sincere congratulations to all the candidates who won this evening, and I have tremendous respect for anyone who throws their hat into the ring and put themselves out there." She added, "To paraphrase the valedictorian of the class of 2026, I regret the chances I have not taken, much more than any regret for having tried something and not succeeded. I wish all the candidates who prevailed success, for their success is the success of our citizens and students." On the $15 million override, Noonan said, "Marblehead chose the best way forward." In a joint statement, Town Administrator Thatcher Keezer and Chief Financial Officer Alicia Benjamin thanked residents who took the time to review, research, and carefully consider the ballot questions, and said the vote reflected a commitment to investing in the community. They returned to the issue of trust, which was a recurring theme during the campaign. "We are humbled by the trust that voters have placed in the town's leadership," they said. "With that trust comes a responsibility to continue operating with transparency, accountability, and fiscal discipline." They said they would keep residents informed about how the money is spent. Director of Public Health Andrew Perry said, "This vote reflects the community's commitment to maintaining essential municipal services while addressing the rising costs associated with collection and disposal." He added, "Moving forward, we remain committed to transparency, fiscal responsibility, and delivering the high-quality services that residents expect and deserve." Throughout the campaign, Benjamin projected a structural shortfall of roughly $7.7 million in fiscal 2027, growing to $11 million in fiscal 2028 and $15 million in fiscal 2029. The current $128 million budget relies on $7 million in one-time free cash to cover recurring costs. Keezer has said health insurance costs rise 15% to 17% a year, compared with the 2.5% annual levy growth allowed under Proposition 2.5. Matt Hooks, co-chair of For Marblehead, called the result a historic investment in the community's future. "We're blown away," Hook said. "For the first time in 21 years, Marblehead said yes to a general override. and did so at a level that truly addresses our long-term financial challenges. John DiPiano said Better Way Marblehead remains disappointed by the override's passage and will no longer pursue a special town meeting. Both sides of the override debate ran strong campaigns, DiPiano said. Better Way Marblehead remains very concerned that the ramifications of this override will not be fully recognized by taxpayers for a few years and will negatively impact Marblehead residents who may already struggle with affordability. DiPiano said committee members are also concerned the outcome will further incentivize what they view as reckless spending. With the override approved, he said, there is no reason to seek a special town meeting. Turnout was unusually strong throughout the day. A total of 8,092 ballots were cast, representing 47.5% of the town's 17,040 registered voters. That exceeded the 39.7% turnout in 2025 and was higher than any annual town election in the independent's records dating to 2006. One of the night's closest contests came in the Housing Authority race, where Jeffrey Whedon narrowly defeated incumbent Gene Eldridge by 67 votes. Five candidates secured seats on the Recreation and Park Commission. Elected were Christopher Kennedy, Shelley Bedrosian, Larry Simpson, Michael McCarthy, and Karen Ernst. Kenneth Klayman finished sixth and was not elected. Several candidates running unopposed also won seats on town boards and commissions. Brian Adams was elected assessor. David Meyer won re-election to the Cemetery Commission. In the race for a two-year unexpired term on the Cemetery Commission, Sally Sands defeated Rose McCarthy 3,605 votes to 2,416. Thomas McMahon, Julie B. Selbst, and Kristen Elizabeth Dubay Horton were elected to the Board of Health. McMahon earned the three-year term. Catherine Barker and Gary Amberick were elected trustees of Abbott Public Library. Matthew Harrington won re-election as Municipal Light Commissioner. Mark J. Liebman and Robert John Schaffner, Jr. were elected to the Planning Board, while Gregory W. Burt and Barton Height won re-election to the Water and Sewer Commission. Voters chose incumbent Jack Attridge for another term as town moderator, defeating challenger Peter Jaffe, 5,038 votes to 2,082. It is an honor and privilege to be entrusted once again with stewardship of our community's most sacred democratic tradition, Attridge said. The results remain unofficial until certified by the town clerk. Lynn City Council Votes Down Budget by Olivia Hadar, Lynn. The fiscal year 27 budget was voted down by the City Council on Tuesday on an 8-3 vote, following a public hearing where many residents spoke in opposition to the proposed $577,017,037, mainly focusing their opposition on the city's not allocating enough for free legal aid for immigrants. Mayor Jared C. Nicholson addressed those concerns when speaking at the beginning of the public hearing, agreeing to direct $50,000 in available American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, funds to go toward Northeast legal aid for residents' immigrant legal financial support. Unfortunately, there is no capacity for additional programming in the fiscal year 2027 budget, Nicholson said, in response to $1.6 million in additional expenditures requested by a group of community organizations after the budget had been completed. In moments when we have capacity, we have worked to seek extensive community input, as we did on the ARPA funds. Nicholson also referenced the fact that many communities in the state, including several close to Lynn, are dealing with dire financial situations. While he presented the counselors with a balanced budget that included no layoffs, Counselor Brian M. Field, Counselor Obed A. Matul, and Counselor Dr. Peter D. Meany voted in support of the proposed fiscal year 27 budget. Council President Coco Allensug, Counselor Natasha S. Meggie Madry, Counselor Jordan T. Avery, Counselor Frederick W. Hogan, Counselor Brian P. LaPierre, Counselor Hong L. Nett, Counselor Nicole D. McLean, and Counselor Cardalise Paez voted in opposition. The eight counselors voting in opposition stated a need for the reallocation of the fiscal year 27 proposed budget for the immigrant population among Lynn residents. I would like us to consider reworking the budget to allocate $100,000 to expand legal services for our everyday community, McLean said. This is not a criticism of the proposed budget, but rather a recognition of the significant needs that exist in our community. The three counselors voting in support of the proposed budget stated it was balanced and had been looked over intensely by the Budget and Financial Department in a process that started in January. I was born in Guatemala, and I will fully support my immigrant community, said Matul. However, as a business owner myself, I also know finances. I know my numbers, and I think that's the way we need to move forward. The public hearing lasted more than 2.5 hours with a series of speakers advocating for a no vote on the budget. Multiple residents spoke of family members who have been deported by ICE. The next scheduled City Council meeting is June 23rd. Man Who Killed Teen in Saugus Crash Sentenced by Elizabeth Della Piana, Saugus. William Ledger, 40, of Salem, was sentenced in Essex County Superior Court on Tuesday in relation to the death of 19-year-old nursing student Ashley Forward of Lynn in Saugus. On June 9, 2021, Ledger robbed the 7-Eleven on Lincoln Avenue in Saugus and fled from police. He drove a stolen vehicle south in the northbound lanes of Route 107 and collided with Forward's vehicle, according to the Office of Essex County District Attorney Paul F. Tucker. Forward was killed in the crash, and Ledger pleaded guilty to charges of manslaughter, unarmed robbery, and possession of a stolen vehicle. The sentencing occurred exactly 5 years to the day of Forward's death. Her sister, Jillian Forward, and mother, Michelle Luongo, both spoke in memory of her. Today is the day I have yearned and feared as the younger sister of Ashley Forward. Today marks the 5-year anniversary of my sister's passing. And that is exactly 1,286 days, 43,838 hours since the tragedy that left many in grief, Jillian Forward said. She continued to remember her time with her sister. You taught me how to learn how to play. We ran the field and chased the setting sun, adventures waiting for us one by one. You're my guide, my partner, and my shield, she said. Jillian Forward spoke about the loss of her sister, the moment she found out about the crash, and what she endured after it happened. I want to make my family proud, my friends proud, and my community proud, and most of all I want to make her proud, she said. Luongo said she was there to speak for her daughter because she no longer had a voice. Ashley was a remarkable young woman with a bright future ahead of her, Luongo said. She was kind, compassionate, and always willing to help others no matter what. Nursing was not just a career choice for her. It reflected who she was. She wanted to care for people, to comfort them and to heal them. Her life mattered deeply, not just to her family, her friends, or the community where she gave so much of her time, but to the people she would have helped along the way. Ledger received a sentence of 18 to 20 years in state prison for the manslaughter charge, to be followed by 5 years of probation from and after that, the DA's office stated. Swampscott Board Delays Hawthorne Progress, by Aaron Hickey, Swampscott. The Select Board voted Monday night to approve a liquor license for the Swampscott Center for the Performing Arts at the former Hawthorne by the Sea property, but delayed a decision on the group's entertainment license after residents raised concerns about potential noise impacts on neighbors. The board voted to continue the public hearing on the entertainment license until its June 17th meeting, with members saying they wanted to hear more information from the applicant, Johnny Ray, who was not in attendance at Monday's meeting, before making a final decision. The Swampscott Center for the Performing Arts is the temporary lessee of the property, which the town purchased in 2022. Earlier this year, the Select Board selected the group's proposal over a competing bid for a 30-month lease of the site, expiring in June 2028, while the town develops a long-term redevelopment plan for the Hawthorne property. Last week, the board approved a common victualler license for the organization, allowing food services. Chair Katie Phelan urged that the public hearing remained open until Monday, allowing for residents to share their input before the board officially voted. Residents voiced concerns about noise from outdoor music and entertainment, pointing to issues they said have occurred at other restaurants and venues in town. Board members spent much of the discussion debating what conditions, if any, should be attached to an entertainment license and how those conditions could be enforced. Board members weighed how a performing arts venue could operate at the site while minimizing impacts on nearby residents. Several members suggested that if the entertainment license was approved, it could be subject to an earlier cutoff time, with board members suggesting 9 or 10 p.m. during the discussion. Select Board member Danielle Leonard said she remained concerned about approving an entertainment license without a clearer understanding of how the venue plans to operate. "This one has just given us very little information to go on in terms of what we can anticipate," Leonard said. "If it's an 8-piece band, I'm a hard no, because I cannot in my right mind imagine how there is not going to be any sound traveling." Leonard said she supported other uses like comedy shows or trivia nights, but questioned how late music levels would affect neighboring properties. Board member Mary Ellen Fletcher said she believed there was a way to balance residents' concerns with the need to support new businesses. "I am very concerned about neighbors, and I'm also concerned to make sure that we have viable businesses," Fletcher said. "I think that there's a way for us to reach a happy medium." Select Board member Wayne Spritz suggested the town could conduct a sound test at the property before the board makes a final decision. He suggested that music similar to what would be played during events at the Performing Arts Center could be performed inside the building with the doors closed, so officials could gauge how much sound travels outside the property. Other board members question how accurately such a test could replicate actual operating conditions, noting that a live event would also include patrons arriving, leaving, and gathering at the property. As the discussion continued, Select Board member Ted Dooley, who was elected to the Select Board after the RFP was chosen, said he was not prepared to vote on the entertainment license until the board had an opportunity to hear directly from the applicant. To be perfectly honest, the Select Board 2 months ago chose to accept an RFP for a performing arts center at this location, so I don't know what the expectation was, Dooley said. We need answers from them. If he can't make it work at 9 or 10, we just set ourselves up for a big failure. So we need to have them answer these questions here. The board ultimately approved the liquor license, but voted to keep the entertainment license hearing open until its June 17th meeting, when representatives for the Swampscott Center for the Performing Arts are expected to return with additional information. New Cell Phone Policy Coming to Nahant Schools by Dylan Pichnarsik. Nahant. Superintendent of Schools Robert Libo announced an upcoming requirement that the district adopt a new, stricter cell phone and personal device policy based on state legislation and guidance from the Attorney General at Tuesday night's school committee meeting. Libo said he anticipates having a drafted policy at the next meeting in August. The new policy, which Libo said can have slight tweaks, outlines that personal devices, including cell phones, are not to be used during the school day, including hallways, lunch, and recess, not just during class. He said taking cell phones away from students raises concerns regarding locating students in the event of an emergency, drawing on his experiences with AL ICE training in another district, where students were instructed to evacuate the school to a secondary location. ALICE, which is an acronym for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, Evacuate, training, prepares people to survive the unimaginable, according to its website. He described how locating students might be difficult without technology in an emergency situation where students may be hiding in spaces within the school building or off-site in a designated reunification area. I understand the overuse of technology, but the worst-case scenario, if you're a parent and your sixth grader is somewhere outside of this building, I would imagine people would be interested in where that is, and when that child is located, and where they may be hiding and scared, and they can't communicate on their phone, and don't know who's safe to talk to, who's not safe to talk to, Libo said. He added, there is a grant from the state supposedly providing money for locked storage. He added that in a larger school, you obviously take a cell phone from a kid. You'd better have some explanation for why you can't return that cell phone to that kid. Libo said he has seen an area in classes with numbered pockets that students put their cell phones in at the start of class. However, with this method, students have their phones in the hallway. You've got it at lunch. You've got it at recess. And they're saying that's not a good thing, he said. Danya Smith named next EDIC Executive Director by Dylan Pichnarsik, Lynn. Following an interview with members of the Lynn Economic Development and Industrial Corporation Board, Danya Smith, Senior Director of Policy and Intergovernmental Affairs for Mayor Jared C. Nicholson, was appointed as the organization's next executive director Tuesday afternoon. Smith's appointment as executive director follows the 20-year tenure of EDIC Executive Director James Cowdell, which ended upon his retirement on June 1st. Charles J. Gaeta, EDIC board chairman, said the board was pleased with Smith's strong credentials. He's been working with the development team now for the 4-plus years that he's been with the city. I think he has the background for this, and I think we are comfortable with a lot of the questions, how they were answered. Gaeta said a contract will be negotiated in the coming weeks. A lifelong Lynn resident, Smith has worked as a senior advisor to Nicholson for 4 years in housing, economic development, education, and project management. Since the creation of the mayor's development team, he has participated in every single development team meeting since its inception. So I was able to really see projects from early planning through implementation, Smith said. I'm really excited about the potential opportunity to drive investment and business to the city. Lynn is at an important time from an economic development perspective. We have strong fundamentals, growing interest from developers in the business community, and an opportunity to sort of shape growth that benefits all residents, Smith said. In this role, Smith said he would be aggressive in attracting business and investment to the city. Smith said he wants to leverage Lynn's existing zoning and land use policies to steer commercial projects into key sites within the city, including attracting companies in the food production and hospitality industry. I think it's clear that we have a food manufacturing and production specialty, and I think we should be focusing on trying to attract those businesses, trying to work with associations that represent those businesses to draw them to Lynn. We have aspirations for a hotel and bringing the hospitality industry to Lynn, he said. He added his work in facilitating this would be to connect with hotel operators and intermediaries to test market demand for a hotel in Lynn. I think we can probably do a better job at targeting specific industries that are aligned with our strengths and our aspirations, Smith said. Smith said his management style is strategic and collaborative, and that he would draw from the knowledge of the folks who have worked here. He added, I like to solve problems. I like to set clear expectations, delegate effectively, and let people take ownership of their work. Okay, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you.